folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's an Australian. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. So we're talking renovations again on the Japan Real Estate Experts panel today. And this time we're talking cost efficiency and maximizing results from renovations. So how to choose the right kind of renovation for the right purpose, long-term tenancies, short-term tenancies, holiday homes, owner-occupied homes, and so forth. How and when it's possible to save on renovation costs by using various alternative materials and design elements, with a bit of a focus on flooring specifically, which can be a big price factor. And then we riff a bit about interior space design specifically geared towards comfort. And again, we differentiate between long-term, short-term tenants and owners occupiers. Tracy then shares a bit about her own signature touch for her short-term stay Airbnb type properties, and how to really bring these properties to life. And from there, we segue into staging and the effect that staging has when trying to sell or rent out a property, what's considered acceptable condition to return rented properties in, and then a few more semi-off-topic and really off-topic conversations like more creative renovations, how to register a property under a minor's name and what are the tax implications there, the unique hurdles involved in registering properties under the name of a native Japanese person who doesn't actually reside in Japan. Quite a unique and a surprisingly challenging scenario there. And a whole lot more. So really good in-depth conversation as usual with the JREP crowd. Hope you enjoy it, and I'll see you again on the other side. All right, we're back. Japan Real Estate Experts panel with our brand new and not so new now member, Blanca. We'll do a quick round of introductions.
Hi, everybody.
You want to take it, Tracy?
Sure. Yeah, I was actually just about to rename my my Zoom feed. So yes, I'm Tracy. I am the short-term rental minpaku expert. I've been doing minpaku in Japan for 10 years, so I've seen all of the changes. So been through regulations, been through a pandemic, am a registered minpaku kandi, and also I have various licenses and hotels and that sort of thing. So I'm here to help people maximize profits with short-term rentals.
I love how we're slowly converting the conversation to we've been through a pandemic, right? It's like, it feels like we're past. I mean, the pandemic's not over, but things are kind of getting back to normal, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to be booking a flight finally to Australia and then to Cyprus 2 months after that for my little brother's wedding. Okay, Blanca, go.
Hi, everybody. I'm Blanca Kobayashi, and I'm a CEO, not CEO, I'm a founder, co-founder of AgriForm, that is a bilingual reform company. We are based in Tokyo. We are right now about a week from opening a showroom in Matsudo, Chiba, and we serve the wide Kanto area. Our niche is that we are a bilingual company, which means we can help foreign residents and property owners in Japan with their renovations needs, whether it comes to their personal residences or even businesses. So if anybody wants to set up a new business or renovate their existing business, we are there for them and we can offer them all the English support from the quotations to basically discussing the whole project and delivering everything in English because we have bilingual staff and we want to help the community to understand that reforming anything is not that big of a stress and we want to take that burden off them.
Yes, brilliant. And I'm Ziv. I'm also co-founder and partner at Dupont Tradings International. And for the past decade, or just over a decade now, we have been assisting foreigners, whether they live in Japan or out of Japan, in purchasing, managing, and potentially selling their real estate holdings. We mainly focus on investment properties and holiday homes. And Blanca, I wanted to ask you, when you do renovation, like when we do a renovation for an investment property, for example, often it's just a case of, we want to make it habitable by your typical kind of Japanese tenant, but we don't want to go overboard because you never get back via rental, at least you don't get back the amount that you put into the property. And I'm wondering, I don't know if you've got experience with investment properties or not, but when somebody wants to renovate, I mean, when it's a home residence, it's a home residence, whatever they feel comfortable with and they want to live in. But when it's a business or let's say an investment property or something where cost and performance is more of an issue, do you level your estimates for them? Like, can you offer them, okay, we do this, or we can do that? And
you know, that's why we offer the first consultations when we basically come to the property and then we discuss with the clients their needs. When they tell us, listen, this is for me and I want to, you know, feel like I'm having a castle, then, you know, we'll offer them that. But as you're saying, investment properties, we know the client will tell us, okay, this is an investment property, so we want it more functional and, of course, on a lower budget, then we do that as well, because, of course, there are ways you can get some of the cheaper materials and, you know, like cheaper toilets and stuff like that. If you do not need state-of-the-art latest model of anything, and you can go, for example, a model from 2 years ago, 3 years ago, we have some of those supplies as well. And then we can, of course, quote it. Or if they say, oh, we don't know, when we've done the bathroom, for example, we had three estimates when we've done our own property. We've had three estimates that one was like, you know, on the budget, one was a mid-level and one was the high end. And then basically we end up choosing the better one because it was for us. But then we also own investment properties. And when we were even building our own investment properties, then of course, that's when you go on the budget because you're going to have people. And at that point, when you are building it or renovating it, you don't even know who is going to be living there. So you don't want to go high end. You go for the functional, low cost items. And then because you know, you're going to have to replacing many of that when the tenants leave. So we are able to give the client different levels based on the materials they might want to use or the base of the material we recommend, because not always the client thinks that he wants what is actually good or you know suitable for the property. Sometimes people have an idea, and you know, we all have that experience. You kind of have an idea that, oh, this is what I really want here. But when the main engineer looks at it and looks at the property, he sees, but this is not really feasible, because if you do it this way, you are looking at 3-4 years and it's off and you have to change it again. So you can do it a different way and it will still suit what you need and it will be more economical. So yeah, we do. We offer more. And even as you say, no jobs is you know, small enough. So of course, even if it's a low budget, we are still up for it because that's job as well.
So what are the main areas that people can actually save on when they're considering a renovation? I know, for example, when we do it, they ask us if we want, you know, just your standard wallpaper or accented wallpaper, or if we want real wood flooring or like linoleum look like wood flooring. So what sort of items are the main cost savers in this sort of job?
You know what, the big things depending on what you choose, for example, for a bathroom. From the bathroom, you can go from 1 million to 7 million. You know, the gap is huge. So if you choose a reasonable size of a bathroom, and then, yes, flooring. Because right now, anything that's related to wood is really expensive because the wood went up several times. So if you are choosing something and you are that set on wood, first of all, you know you will have a huge delays in delivering the contract.
Because, so that because of import, is that why it went up and delayed?
Yes, because you are looking at Ukraine and Russia as the two main wood suppliers.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. There's a big timber. It goes, and it's not coming right now. So wood went up already last year. Last year in May was when a wood went up already. And right now, it's just crazy. So if you're looking at anything wood, and you are relying even on just a plain timber, you have to know that the price will be up. So if you can go with, for example, a wooden floors that only look like wood, but they are not wood, then you are saving yourself a big chunk of money. If you can go with like the normal tiles, normal tile floor, then you know that one is cheap because that one is just few thousands square meter, and you know that one can be done really well, and they have great designs right now. I think people kind of need to realize the functionality of the room that they are renovating and go with that. If they want it on a budget, then they have to go, okay, so I can choose a flooring that looks like what I want it to look, but it's hard enough, so it's not going to be leaving dents. And I can still clean it easily. I always tell everybody, please look at the cleaning aspect, because if you choose something that has like a small lines or small bumps into it, you know that's where the dust is going to go. So you have to go with that, you know, you can maintain it well, that it's not going to be leaving dust, dents, and it still looks good. So I think that's the main point, looking at it from the, effectiveness and the price. So yeah, avoiding wood right now, avoid wood as much as you can.
But the straight Japanese flooring that seems to be everywhere, it dents so easily. I know, because we've got it in our house.
It's soft.
It's like, it's so soft. So, we're only, 4 years into our house, and there's just, the floor is just a mess. Yeah. So look at renovating at some point.
That's when you look into the flooring that is kind of more harder and has like more the cushion on the bottom.
Yeah.
So it's soft, but it's hard, so you don't dent, you don't damage it.
Do they work well with the floor heating, like a gas floor heater?
You would have to choose one that goes with that. But, you know, right now, when it comes to the floorings, like the fake flooring, I call it fake flooring, the catalogs are so huge, you have a really, really big selection of that. Mm. So you don't even, before, I remember when I renovated my house in Europe years ago, they would not even do floor heating unless you had like tiles, big, like stone tiles.
Oh, okay.
And in those 20 years, it changed so much. So you can choose different tiles. You don't have to have those, the really expensive ones, so you just choose ones that work well, that are compatible with floor heating.
You don't see too many stone tile floorings in Japan, do you?
Because it's so expensive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Tracy, you do you're big on interior design too, right?
I'm big on space design. So
okay,
what I do when I, you know, when I go into a house, what I'm looking at is how the place is going to be used. So I'm looking at, you know, people are going in and out with suitcases on a daily basis, like, you know, on a regular basis. So
you're going to be changing the flooring once a year.
I'm going to be changing the flooring. I'm going to be, you know, fixing the wallpaper because, you know, there's marks. And oftentimes, even though Japan, the rule is you got to take your shoes off, a lot of people don't. I know that. when I'm not there. They're not taking their shoes off. I know that because it's not the norm in other countries. So yeah, I just factor that in. And what I also do is I factor in placement of furniture so that I know that when people are coming into the house for the first time with their suitcases, you don't want to make an obstacle course because then you're just going to get more wear and tear on your furniture and on your house. So you just make it really easy for people and you just think about how they're using a space. So the design part, I'm not, I don't claim to be an interior designer at all. But I think about how a space is going to be used. But the thing is, my ideal guests, the people that are coming to stay with me, they're choosing me because I know how to make their life comfortable, not because I have a magazine-worthy house. It's just the clientele that I attract and that I deliberately attract because I know I can look after them the best.
Yeah.
Then there must be some things that you're conscious of when you, let's say you just got a new property for management, and there must be some things aside from the placement of the furniture that you know are a must to attract your right kind of guest, right?
Absolutely. I have a checklist.
Lay it on us.
I have a checklist and I have a shopping list and actually have a bunch of stuff in storage. So whenever I have a new place, I just go and, you know, I go shopping in my storeroom, which is great. And interestingly, oh, there's someone at my doorbell. Hold that thought.
So how's the business right now? Is it getting better?
It is very good. Yes, we're now, again, we were talking before we went on air, we were talking about staffing issues. So we've lost our office staff at a very bad time because it's the busiest year we've ever had to date. So now we're beyond experimenting, we've already started outsourcing a lot of the work that we do to third parties.
Mm-hmm.
So there's obviously some kinks and wrinkles to work through until it becomes a smooth process, but it's going well, I think. And now we're hiring. We've got a lady coming in after Golden Week who's going to be taking over office admin. Nice. She looks good. Hopefully she would be good.
Yes.
So yeah, busiest time ever for us, but we're happy. Yeah,
no yeah, complaints. That's fantastic. That is fantastic. I hope it's going to pick up soon for everybody, honestly. You know, as you said, we are kind of talking as if it's past Corona and Japan is still so deep in the mess. So it's very surprising, you know. Hopefully Japan will catch up with the rest of the world and you know, open up before they close again.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking about it. I know Emil's going to Australia in July and I'm going to be right hot on his footsteps in August. I hope we can get back in relatively easy. But I mean, I can't complain because for us, since COVID started, it's been crazy busy. First, because the market was soft, and then because people had more interest in Japan. It's kind of, I think, because people can't get in here, they're even more interested in the country now. Like, when I get back, I want to have my own holiday home that I can get to.
Yes.
Sorry, Tracy, you were saying yes. So the design checklist, sorry.
Yeah, sorry, that was someone at my door. And so my design checklist is, so I always start with, so obviously I need all the basics, right? And I always start with, for the design part, I always start with a kimono.
Kimono, as in dress up kimono?
For the walls, that's my signature piece. So I have a ton of antique kimonos in storage. And so I pick one that I like that's nice and bright because when you're marketing it, you need something that's going to pop off the screen. And I always pick a kimono. And then that's what I then use to then pick the soft furnishings and the color of the, the color of the duvets. And I think my guest is still here. Hang on.
We're giving you in installments today, yeah.
No, but life is busy. That's really good.
Yeah, so that's what I do. So I always that's my design aesthetic is I have a kimono, and then that tells me what color cushions and soft furnishings and quilts to buy from that. So that's about as far as I get. So, but I mean, I, you know, because it's a rental, I can't put anything like, you know, real plants in there. So I have a bunch of sort of, you know, I try to get nice fake plants, something that's, you know, because there's fake plants and there's fake plants, right? There's,
yeah.
And I try to obviously bring a bit of life and soul to it because, you know, I think, you know, I don't want that, and my guests don't want that corporate, they don't want a corporate apartment. They don't want a hotel, like a clinical hotel or, you know, God forbid, a business person's hotel. So they want something that's got the, you know, and I have some tchotchkes and I have some, you know, photos of my team and photos of my family up and, you know, and also I have a bunch of magazines and I, you know, the, you know, there's free press magazines that you get on the street.
Yes.
I have a bunch of those, you know, tour maps, just try. And then also I have kids toys because I'm really big on families. So kids toys, kids games, pack and play. So that's all on my list. So
those are like perks, right? Like the child friendly stuff. And then are there any other perks that people really love and talk about after they, when they give you a review? Like, I don't know, like some people put in a coffee machine or.
Yeah. I mean, we, you know, obviously we have free tea and coffee as well, but the thing that people get the most is the portable Wi-Fi units. That's what really gets people. So I have a hot, like every, I have the unlimited fast Wi-Fi at home. And but then also they get that little portable, the little portable one that they can take around the street. So that's
so you have both. Wow, that's that is luxury because usually it's a single one that people can just go out with or use at home. But you're giving them both.
Well, the single one, the portable ones, really are, you know, they have very limited bandwidth. They are not like, you know, even if you're trying to upload a YouTube video, they're pretty useless. And, you know, like I said, all of my guests are family. So, you know, often there's teenagers who want a game or they, you know, Instagram or whatever. And it's just, you just can't do it with, you know, if you try and be cheap and put in the, you know, just the portable, it just backfires on you in the long run.
Yeah. You can't do that. Right now, I think the first thing everybody looks for is how's the Wi-Fi?
Yeah. And also, I actually put cable TV in as well.
Okay.
So, you know, I collected up all my DVDs. So there's actually DVDs in all of my places as well. So, you know, Japanese TV is a novelty, but when, you know, if you've been schlepping around all day and you just want to, you know, if you just want to sit down with your family and like watch a movie, Japanese TV just doesn't cut it. So
yeah, it's good for the first couple of days for the culture shock kind of effect, and then it's okay, talk shows and cooking, I get it.
Yeah or like ooh, eh. Yeah, no, I can't be on with it.
I don't even watch it, and I lived in Japan. I live in Japan for 21 years
I can't. So we don't even have an antenna on the house.
No, I can't do that.
My son is fluent. He won't. He still won't watch Japanese TV. He just does not like it. Just
same.
He
David doesn't do that either.
No, he just wants YouTube and, you know, gamers YouTube. Oh, I don't understand.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation before about like what a 12-year-old boy.
We have our boys are I think a year apart.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a different world. But David would watch. He has some Japanese YouTubers that he's watching, but TV no. There's one program Sunday evening 7:30 p.m. Darwin something. I don't even remember what's the name. That we watch because that one's about animals and kind of like traveling around the world. It's 30 minutes.
Oh, lovely.
That one's nice. And even at that, sometimes people are like, really?
My son's into Japanese YouTubers that read or tell horror stories. He's heavily into that now.
And
when he comes into the kitchen to do his chores, you know, drying the dishes or what, and this, cut that out. Play some music for God's sake.
Yes.
How old's your son?
12, just started junior high.
Oh, well, they're almost 13 now.
That's David. That's my son. That's so it's same age as my David.
Yeah. We're all showing our age now.
Yeah. Emil, who's not here, he's all little. He's
got youngsters, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, 7, 5, and 3 or something.
Mm. Ooh.
I'm
actually very happy that David is now at that age, because he's already independent. You know, he does not need parents around all the time. He can do a lot of things himself. He can cook himself a meal if need be, you know, all that. Yeah, so he's very independent, and it's just great.
When's he buying his first real estate investment, Blanca?
Yeah, I was going to ask.
He's been asking about that, funny enough. He is very, you know, independent life oriented. So, you know, because he's making money since he was 2. He's modeling for quite a while right now. So he's got some savings, and he always, when he gets paid, you know, he puts part of the money into his savings. He invests some of it. He invests in crypto, of course, because of daddy.
Of course.
Of course. You know, he's one of those 12 years old that has a crypto wallet or two on his, you know,
nice.
Yeah. On his phone, and checks the price regularly and stuff, and updates us. Mom is down again. It's going up. It's going up. It's all good. So he's one of those. And so lately he was asking, what it's like, how it's going to work when he can buy his first apartment. You know, but at this point we are telling him, listen, you have to first wait, at least when you have a direction as where you want to go to university. And
an apartment to live in, you mean, not an investment property.
No, because I don't want it. We have enough of those. I'm not really, at this point, I don't think that the kid needs to buy anymore. my husband spent the past few years really going that direction. And so I don't think he really needs that for now. But I think I would want him to actually buy something for himself and then learn how to manage that and how to take care of the place, how to, you know, fix it up if needs be. But he needs to decide where he wants to go, and he doesn't know that yet. You know, he right now he's in school in Japan, but he does want to go abroad for high school.
Okay.
So, you know, you don't do that. You have to decide a little bit, at least a little bit, your direction first.
Mm.
So investment properties are going to come later. I want him to first get his little place on his own that he will learn to first take care of.
That makes sense. Emil, welcome on, man.
Yeah, Emil, pleasure to meet you in person, finally.
Yeah, I thought, have we, or is the first time?
No, we had one session with the both of you, I think.
Mm-hmm. Because I was watching the video as well of your session. So I'm like, was was it a video?
I think we've chatted when I was connecting you with a friend of mine.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's right. Just sort of briefly.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Emil, introduce yourself and then you can jump straight into renovations and design, interior design, which is what we've been discussing. How to maximize profit without going overboard with your interior.
Speak with crypto. Your son's on a good thing. Oh my God. Yes, I'm a real estate agent here in Tokyo, so I help people find their own family homes. I think Ziv, you do my introduction at the start and middle of some of these videos in the podcast. So that's me. Been here for 19 years. And yeah, I help families, often mixed, like, you know, one spouse is foreign, one spouse is Japanese, or two foreign family, but buy their own family home in Tokyo, and arrange all the financing as well. So we have bank connections, the loan officers from the mega banks assigned to our agency, real estate agency. So we can do all the mortgage brokering function as well, included in our standard agency process. So any questions about, you know, financing, what you can get as a foreigner based on your residency status, how long you've been in Japan, employment, etc., please, reach out. And that's what I do sort of in and out day to day. So happy to help answer any questions you may have.
So renovations, Matt, I know that you've mentioned here a few times in the past that there's not much of a point in renovating your home to be a dream home in the sense that it's not going to take your property price up significantly. But what do you find with your experience renovations for rentals? Like what do you do for a property that you're going to be renting out? If you want to make it more hospitable and find tenants more easily, but you don't want to go overboard and destroy profitability.
Okay, so that's not something I can answer with like professional experience, because I focus on home purchases, not home sales. Not on like renovation and rentals. Okay, so I don't really touch the rental side so much. I'm not too familiar with it.
Own properties, your Airbnbs or whatnot.
Yeah. So with that, usually the standard process, like our office, we have about 1,000 properties under management and we have a full rental team. So we do, when you have about 1,000 properties, is about 10 or so tenants moving out per week. So that's a lot of wallpapering and all that sort of, you know, just cleaning and maintenance and sort of bits and pieces. So our office has started doing that in-house from about a year ago, and sort of renovations as well for our clients and people that are buying homes and things like that. But generally for a rental property in Japan, you just want to like tidy it up. You don't want to go too high spec, too high grade. It depends on what kind of clientele are you trying to get. Okay. If it's a place down in Azabu and you know and people are paying 800,000 yen a month, 1.2 million yen a month, you need to worry about some of the details and the quality. Okay. But when they're paying, you know, 100,000 yen a month, 120, 150,000, you don't need to spend on the higher grade wallpaper, right? You don't need it to be so, you know, you don't need to go for the more expensive stuff. The kitchen countertops don't need to be very, very expensive. You don't need to put an oven in there as well. That's not very, very common. There's a lot like the toilets, for example. You don't need to get the high-end one that has the automatic the standard washlet is fine. The ones with the electric seat raising and seat come down and all that fancy feature, you don't need to go to that level. Often, I've got property in Australia as well. These little upgrades don't reflect in rent. Okay, the square meterage, the age of the building, and the number of bedrooms, that's the key factors at the beginning, and location.
Okay? But and you can differentiate yourself from the length of how long the vacancies, like, for example, if you're a cookie cutter property that's available for rent and there's five or six similar ones in the neighborhood, sometimes just a nice wallpaper can make the difference in you people choosing you over another, right?
Again, it depends on the property, right? If it's a one room mansion, like a 1LDK, maybe not. Like your design features, I think, are not going to make such a difference. Like when we go to a more modern building, like even just looking to buy, okay, we go to a more modern building, like generally the sinks and everything are more modern. They are newer. They match a kind of grade for that building, right? So it doesn't kind of make a great deal of sense to spend excessively when you, there's a certain level where I think you no longer get the ROI from it.
Yeah. Okay?
But you need to, like, you can't just make it just rubbish and just leave it completely like dirty and unclean. A great example is the cleaning. Okay. When tenants check out and a new one comes in, we charge them a cleaning fee. And I think everyone's experienced it. It's like 60, it's almost 1,000 yen per square meter. So it's like 50, 60, 70,000 yen. I've got a 3-bedroom house. The cleaning for that and the air conditioners is about 150,000 yen, right? Just when someone leaves and they come and do a really thorough job. And that's a basic expectation that the house is really, really clean.
We interrupt this broadcast. I always wanted to say this. We interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens. And they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
But you can also charge the new tenant for the same cleaning fee. When they leave, you need to get the professional cleaners in, because that was how it was presented to you. Similarly with the designs, like when we look at like replacing wallpaper or what have you, if it gets to a certain level of, like, if it's a bit too tattered and just too aged, it's okay. You want to get quality tenants. Again, we're looking at the price points. It's not just trying to attract just a more expensive one, because at the end of the day, there's a lot more important factors than the color of the wallpaper. Right? In Japan, it's like, you know, the white, the off-white, the beige, the ivory, and the bone, right? Yeah. Is what the colors of the wallpaper. And so that's not going to catch someone. No one's going to decide on your property because of this wallpaper. Right, it's the location, the size, and the number of bedrooms, layout, sunlight, so many more important features. So as long as it's clean and really well presented, I think they're the key factors. All these other stuff that you would really like in your own personal home, these little upgrades, I feel they're not really reflected in the rental or even the resale value.
No, I agree with that, but we... like in our experience, for example, once in a while we get a property become vacant at just a really bad time of year, right? Like the low season, just after everyone's done with the recruiting and the university students started the new academic year. And then in May or June, you suddenly get a vacancy. We have one particular property manager that works Fukuoka, Nagoya, Kyoto, Osaka, a few other areas. And she is a bit of an interior designer. And we found that when she puts in not just a different color wallpaper, but an actual design wallpaper, like that looks like brick or wood or something a bit more attractive.
The accent wallpaper.
The accented wallpaper. And she stages the room up, like she puts in a few pieces of furniture in it that normally you wouldn't see in a 1R or 1K or 1LDK. The vacancies do tend to become shorter. So like you said, we're not going to raise the rent because the room looks nicer, but people just go for that as opposed to the other room next door kind of thing. Right?
And I would agree with that. Like a lot of people, all of us here in this room, we can go into an empty place and see the potential. We're like, absolutely. We've got the eye, we've got the experience. We can go in and we can see where things will go, where things will live, what things could look like. If, this wall was gone, we've got that wired in our brains. But the average person can't visualize that, and also believe it or not, people with dyslexia don't actually have that skill of visualizing. They actually have to see it in place, and that's why staging is always so good when you're selling when you're selling a property or when you're trying to rent a property. Having that stage and showing people the potential lets people imagine themselves there. It's much better than just seeing a blank slate, a blank shell. So your interior designer does exactly the right thing, because for a lot of people, they need to see it and need to see themselves in that space if they're going to, you know, fish out their credit card to buy something. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But I have a question. I have a question for you, Blanca. Tell me these, because, you know, I rent a lot of, I do arbitrage. So, you know, a lot of these places I rent and I can't change the wallpaper so much. But there are some of those self-adhesive, like, you know, removable wallpapers. What are they like these days? And are they expensive?
It comes up actually quite pricey. And the self-adhesive wallpapers, they don't hold really well.
Right. Okay.
To be honest, like if you put them, for example, if you would put them in a room that has more humidity, they do
slide off. Yeah,
they kind of slide off. But if you do not have that many options, you can put accents on the walls, which end up looking better.
What, like a string?
You can put strings like that, or you can just kind of accent one wall or around the TV and stuff. We've done one living room that where they had the TV and stuff, they put like a wood panel looking wallpaper. And
just on the back of the TV.
Just on the back of the TV, and then it looks like they have a wooden cabinet and stuff. And it changes the room. It changes the room so much right away.
Yeah.
You can see when you come, I hope you will come for the Matsuda opening in basically in 2 weeks. And the way we did our reception, we also put the wallpaper, one of those really difficult wallpapers that it's like all the V-shaped.
Chevron,
I saw your video.
I love it so much because, you know, the guy, he's a real artist. He's like a musician. And he's absolutely our type of guy. He listens to Afrobeats, but he does his job. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how he found us, honestly, or how we found him, because he's like, his taste of music, he's a Japanese guy, but he listens to Afrobeats and to like our kind of music. And the way he lines up the paper and everything is like, whenever I watch him putting down wallpapers, I'm looking like, wow, honestly, he knows what he's doing, and he makes it look so easy. But then you realize, you know, how much work goes
behind. Really hard. It's really hard. But the stuff that he was putting on, is that like removable? Was that permanent? No. That was the
normal permanent blue. Yeah. But the accents are removable.
Oh, interesting.
But it, you know, I cannot guarantee you, depending on how big surface you put it on, that it will go off well.
Okay. Because, you know, I've got a lot of things to consider. I've obviously got to consider the wear and tear, you know, different people in and out all the time, how it's going to look in photos, and also how to get it back to the state that it needs to be in to give it to the owner. So
the accents,
you're anyway going to have to do a little bit of a renovation when you hand the property back, right?
No, usually when I hand a property back, I it's clean. It's like, I'm like, you know, I don't do wallpaper or anything, but it is absolutely spotless when it goes back. I've walked into enough places where they haven't been cleaned after people have moved out, and I've just gone, really? It's just disrespectful. So,
but you don't need to. You don't need to replace wallpaper, fix up.
No. It's built into the. I mean, I've got a standard Shintai contract mostly, so it's built into the contract that, you know, a certain amount's going to come out of the, you know, out of my deposit anyway. I've never lost a deposit yet. Never.
Mm.
Yeah.
Go with the accents. The accents are easily removable, and you know, they make a big change. And you can cover up also some small damages. I'm covering up right now behind our sofa because we changed sofa.
Yeah.
And our former sofa was kind of red leather, and it rubbed off on the wallpaper. And I don't want to change the whole wallpaper because of space like this. But then our new sofa.
Bed heads are the same.
Yeah. So our new sofa is also lower. So I found a accent that goes well with our curtains and everything. And it's kind of a similar design. So it's going to be there, and it's just kind of sections of that space behind the sofa, and it looks pretty, and it saves in a kind of, yeah.
That's in your Matsudo house that I went to, was it?
Yes, that's the one. So
see her house? It is stunning. It is stunning.
Mm. Yeah, we try.
It's we octagonal, for goodness sake. Who lives in an octagonal house?
We do.
Oh, that'll be one for the next. That'll be one for our next session. Let's talk about unusually shaped houses.
Yes. And where to put furniture when you're actually in there. So
in an octagonal room, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. But, you know, you can play with the space. And I fell in love with that house because of the space that it has.
Mm.
So, you know, it's 500 square meters. So I have a Japanese garden when I walk in the house. Then I have my little greenhouse for my turtles and tortoises, not turtles, tortoises, and a little garden. And then we have the house. And then behind the house is a space like our little gym. And my son has a basketball court there. And, you know, more flowers and, you know, trees and sitting on the balcony.
Can you just stop that blanket? Just stop
that. Right.
And you've
cut it out.
There's like these lions. Are they lions at the front of the door?
Yes, yes. We have lions there right now.
Full size lions at the front door, for goodness sake.
Yes. That is, you know, that happened because we unfortunately had to close one of our bars. And it was a sports bar. And those lions were gifted to the sports bar by MGM. They were flown from Vegas.
MGM lions.
Yes. So my husband, of course, was not willing to let them go because their value is far bigger than just the fact that they are two huge lions because of the connection with the MGM and everything. So when we closed the place, we took them home. We had them, you know, cleaned and resprayed, and they are there right now. And if we maybe we'll open something again and then put it back there. But right now they are at home. So we have lions by our Genkan.
That's fantastic. Guarding the property.
Yeah.
You said you have to hard stop at 2:30, right?
Yes, I do. I was just reminded that I have to leave. Unfortunately, I have another appointment and I have to run.
Yep.
Good to see you.
It was a pleasure to see you all, guys. And I'll see you next week.
And you'll invite me to the thing. So, yes.
Barbecue
in that store.
Mm, definitely, that one's going to happen. I have to check exactly on the date.
Yeah.
But that's like the first weekend or so. First Friday, Saturday of either first or second Friday, Saturday of May. And then, of course, when the weather gets really nice and stuff, we'll do barbecue.
Excellent.
Oh, we're getting there.
Yeah, we're getting there. It's beautiful. It's beautiful.
Perfect. Yes. Awesome.
Good
so I'll see you Blanca. Guys next week.
Bye.
Thanks for joining so early.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Bye.
And Tracy, you're taking my wife away on Saturday. I heard I'm babysitting duty.
I'm not. I'm not coming down this weekend.
Oh, you're not coming.
I was trying to, but because it's Golden Week, it's I can't get the flights. So
I was hoping you're going to snap some photos of her in a business setting. She's very camera shy when I try.
Well, we'll make sure it's done. But I actually did have a real estate question, and Blanca's gone now, but I did have a real estate question. Is there an age limit for purchasing property?
For a person to purchase?
Yeah.
Just for the loan, I think.
No. If it was cash, let's say it's cash.
No.
You can
have one leg in the grave and still be buying. No.
Oh, I'm talking youth-wise, like.
Oh.
Underage.
Something. Do you buy? You know, do you buy something in your child's name and have?
I don't think you can. You can buy something and put it under your child's name, but it's considered a gift, and then gift tax comes into play.
Gift tax.
So this. There's two things I think we need to consider. One is the gift tax aspect of it, because where did they get the money from is one, because they're not going to get financing because they don't have a job.
Right.
So it's obviously coming from mom and dad. And is it a gift? But also I know gift tax is different if it's for someone to buy a house, because parents give their children money to purchase a house is pretty common. So there's a bit of a buffer or tax break for when that happens.
Yeah, I mean, because David, who like Blanca's son, he has his own money because he's been working since he was two.
So,
And so he's been saving his money. So he'll be buying his own, like he'll be buying his own property with his own money.
And that's the next question is, at what age can they legally register a property?
Yes.
Right? Because there's, I know you need to have a income shomisho, income certificate to register, or you need a notary to sign your proof of, like, so sometimes some people that don't have a hunko, some wealthy expats, etc. I'm sure, Ziv, many of your clients who are just not even in Japan. Yeah.
Almost all of them. Yeah.
That, but to have a scrivener prove it, I don't know if there's an age requirement or not.
We've never asked about that. I know that you can definitely register properties under a minor's name, but whether, I don't think they do it though. It's you on their behalf as their caretaker. You're signing all of the documents on their behalf, I think, and then the property goes under their name.
Yeah, so that's, so yeah, I don't know if from a technical aspect if that's possible or not. I'll ask. We have some meetings and some settlements coming up just after Golden Week, so I'll ask the scrivener, the judicial scrivener who does actual, they actually go to the Ministry of Affairs. So basically what happens on the contract, on the settlement date. So we have a settlement on May 9th, is we all get together and the bank, like usually the bank's office, and the bank will, although this time it's a Shinsei Bank, and Shinsei now is doing everything remote, right? So we are all going to gather at the seller's office, and then Shinsei is going to transfer, like, basically $500,000 to the 50 million yen to the seller.
Oh, no suitcases of cash for you this time.
Oh, no. That was like 2 months ago when we did the deposit.
Okay.
The settlement is mostly transfers. Yeah. So basically we go there, the judicial scrivener checks all the documents, everything's okay. Jumi Hyo, like the residency certificate, all the identification, everyone is who they say what they are, all the documents are okay. They'll call the bank and they say, yes, everything is in order. Please issue the funds. And the 50 million yen, the 50 million yen gets transferred into the buyer's account. And then it gets distributed to the accounts that you prepared, you know, so like, you know, 45 million yen goes to the seller's account for the actual house. Another 2 or 3 million yen will go to the agent for the agency fee. Another 1 million yen goes to the scrivener for the title registration fee. Some goes that to the insurance company and all that sort of stuff. And that's how it works. So anyway, we have that on Monday, and the judicial scrivener is going to be there. And on that day, that's what I was getting at, the judicial scrivener will actually take all those documents and a bunch of like power of attorneys that the clients sign, and he goes to the Ministry of Affairs and does the formal title transfer. So the title doesn't actually go in your name until after the settlement. But you get the keys on that day, and that's when you can go straight to your house and do whatever you like. Yeah. So I'll speak to the scrivener.
They can definitely do that on behalf of a minor, but who actually signs the documents, I'm not sure.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised, to be honest, if it's easier for a foreign minor to do it than a Japanese minor. Because a Japanese minor, say, you're Japanese, like, I just imagine, right, if in Japan, they may have a certain rule that minors aren't able to do it. So they cannot even register the inkan shomisho, right? Possibly. I haven't worked with it. But this is what I can imagine. So a Japanese person, child trying to get it done, they're like, no, you don't meet the requirements. You're not of the age to get the necessary documents. Whereas a foreign national can get a power of attorney and the notary to sign off with their guardian to sign off, and those documents are acceptable for a non-Japanese, but a Japanese citizen is not able to use those documents. They have to use the Japanese documents.
That makes sense, actually, because we've had absolute nightmares when we have a couple. Usually the husband is going to be a foreigner, the wife is going to be Japanese. They're living overseas, like in Canada or the U or whatever. So with all normal foreign couples, the scriveners, especially the ones that are not used to working with foreigners, they're accepting the notary public certified documents because it's a foreigner. They don't have a hanko. But when there's a Japanese wife and they don't know what to do with that, they're like, okay, well, she needs to go to the consulate and she needs to get a Japanese consulate certificate. She's living in Vancouver and the consulate is like 3,000 k's away on the other side of Canada. That's just not going to happen. We have to explain it to them.
Like proof of marriage. I've got many friends that they've gone back with their Japanese, like, you know, they've gotten married in Australia, for example, and they've got all their marriage certificates in Australia. And they're trying to prove that now they're trying to come back, for example, with COVID, that there's a family member that they married. Well, where's the Koseki Tohon? Where's the Japanese document that says that you're married? And like, no, we never registered in Japan. Well, we'll get it done. And it's just like, yeah, it's that. So I think we understand that it could be harder for Japanese. Similarly to when you get married, like maybe some of the listeners, a lot of listeners will not be aware, but when a Japanese marry each other, Japanese, one of them has to change their name. 90-95% of the time, it's the wife will enter the husband's family register. And so that family register will be like the husband's, you know, surname, like Nakamura, for example.
Yeah, that's still a thing. Well,
it's like, you know, it'll be Nakamura's family register, and then all the members under that, the husband, the wife, and all the children. And whereas one person has to do it. And there are some cases where the husband will go into the wife's family register and they'll take the family name of the wife. However, when you marry a foreigner, when I married my Japanese wife, she wasn't like, because she does not move into my family register, I don't have a Japanese one. I was just a footnote on her family register that, you know, my wife, a Japanese person, has married in the marriage history.
Same in my case.
I was a footnote. So she didn't have to change it. And then she could, so in the case where, you know, a Japanese marries a foreigner, they're not obliged to change their name. Whereas a Japanese couple, the woman must, or generally it's the woman, has to change her name. And I think you guys hear there's been lots of court stuff recently about it. And when one of the Japanese courts finally decided, no, they won't allow it because it will disrupt or confuse children and their family structure. I think is
yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, 1950 called it, wants its culture back.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Yeah.
What's that around?
Mm.
Yeah, just about the renovations.
I didn't change my name. I got married here in Japan to a non-Japanese, and I got married at the Nakano ward office. And I didn't change my name. If I wanted to, I'd have to actually, it'd be a real pain anyway. So, because I'd have to sort of write back to Australia and birth, deaths, and marriages and actually legally change my name. It was just like, nah, not gonna. So,
yeah.
Born in Northcote, I'll die in Northcote. So,
hopefully not too soon, though.
No, oh my goodness.
Yeah, we were talking about renovations earlier, and yeah. I think we're doing just something a bit tidy, like an accent wall, a little bit of decoration. And accent walls cost nothing. There's maybe like an extra cost of like 5,000 yen per wall, not even 10,000 yen per wall. And the accent wall is like, it's still the wallpaper, just a different color, maybe a dark, often a darker shade.
Yeah.
Gives it the perception of a bit more depth in the room. Behind the TV is a good example of where they commonly put accent walls, or along the staircase. That's where I've got like the, on one side of the staircase, it makes it feel a bit deeper, technically. Stuff like that doesn't cost money, and it's more decorative and it's tasteful. That stuff is fine and can make increase the rentability of it. But I think we were talking about before, like high end renovations, paying more for renovation costs, higher grade kitchens, higher grade toilets, fancier fittings, stuff that really costs significant money for rentals. Not really worth it, because the tenant is just going to kind of use and abuse it, and you don't want anything too delicate in there.
No, but the thing is, the bog standard wallpapers that you find, like if you flip through the wallpapers, and you know the lower end ones are actually still really like you would. I mean, we have some high end ones in our house, we have lower end ones in the house. We just chose it for the colors. But really just the basic, you know, the basic wallpapers are totally great here. So
the cost is negligible though. Oh, like the cost per, like between the low, medium, and high tier wallpapers, the cost is nothing. Like wallpaper itself doesn't cost, like, it's like, you know, what is it, 150, 200 yen per meter of length. Mm. So to change, to upgrade just a whole wall in a nicer finish, like just one accent wall, mm-hmm. is just really just a few thousand, like not even a few thousand yen.
Mm. Yeah.
It's, yeah, so like when our office does some wallpaper renovations and stuff, like people are like, oh, but I want an accent wall in this room and that. We're like, okay, just go and check what the, like go to like Lily Color or whatnot, the showroom in Shinagawa or Shinjuku. I think Lily Color is in Shinjuku and Sangetsu is another maker, is in Shinagawa. So go to their showroom, take the floor plans and just try on each wall what color you want. So usually there's a base color, like all the ceiling and walls tend to be one kind of material, and then you'll have an accent wall in each room. And then of course the bathroom, it will be a different one, like the vanity unit, etc. And some people go all out with the different accents, and that's fine, but the cost is just negligible. It's like not even worth discussing. And if they want just one or two extra accent walls, just tell us what the code is and that's fine. It's like zero cost.
Yeah, when you do it, I think doing it later as a reno costs more to change, you know, to add accent walls later. It is more expensive, but you know, if you're building or if you're actually, you know, getting the whole place redone at once, then for a rental,
it's a labor cost.
Yeah.
It's entirely the labor cost. Yeah. So I think stuff like that, like we have an accent wall in each one of our rooms when we built this house. I think that's worthwhile doing and you can really like it. What I like that actually costs a bit is the Echo Carrot tile. So behind our TV,
we've got those as well.
Okay. Yeah, and they're like little tiles and they're meant to technically absorb moisture and sort of give it off and keep humidity and sort of absorb some smell and they maintain it. But I just like the look of it. It's a nice, like, you know, hard, like, you know, texture. Tile.
Mm.
And because you can get the fake textured wallpaper, mm-hmm. which I think that's fine for rental. You don't want to spend 300,000 yen on the whole back wall. On the Echo Carrot, right? It's not for a rental, but for my personal house, yes.
Yeah.
Right. I like that classic. Yeah. So they're the kind of things I was talking about. I don't think that kind of nice upgrade is justifiable in a renovation, but definitely I spent like a lot on upgrades on my house, just on everything, making it sort of the higher standard. All the taps, I think Tracy, you've been here. All the taps in my house, the toilets and the bathroom and the kitchen are all electric. Right, or the automatic. You put your hands under there.
Yeah, we had an episode on that. I remember the features that you might trying to save on, and then down the track, why didn't I put that in?
I didn't know that was a thing. So I'm kind of regretting not doing that in my house now. Maybe if we ever do a reno, it's like, I want those electric for my house. Yeah.
So it's endless.
It's endless, but like, so just the taps, like just a tap attachment, like you've got a sink, it's really just modifying that unit and installing that. Mm-hmm. And the tap itself costs about 50,000 to 80,000 yen new. Right? They're not really cheap. But you jump on Yahoo Auctions or Mercari, and there's people selling either used ones or their X display model. You search Tenjihin means display model for kitchens and appliances. Or sometimes the builder, like it happens, right? And we've all experienced it. We're doing a renovation or something and they bring the wrong item.
Right.
It's different. They shoot the wrong one and they just eat the cost and they put it online and they sell it. And you can get it for, you know, 10, 20, 30,000 yen.
Interesting.
And you can do it yourself. Like one of my big regrets in our kitchen is there's the rice cooker drawer, right? And it's like little, like hole in the cupboard and you can put the rice cooker there, and when you're actually cooking you slide it out. This has got a drawer, you slide it out and literally just kind of extends out, and so when it's cooking all the steam just blows out and not inside the little square cupboard space. When I bought it, you could get an option which has an electric fan just above it, and so you can leave the rice cooker pushed in there. And when it's got an automatic sensor, so when the steam starts coming up, the little unit at the top just sucks the air and blows it to the front of the cabinet, right? And it just so it doesn't pull out, etc. And that was like the option was like 40 or 50,000 yen, which is like, you know, three times the cost of our rice cooker. I'm like, yeah, no, I can't justify it. We'll just slide it out. And it's been bugging me for like 7 years. every morning, that is, it's right there. So finally,
I got it, guys. I'm like, sorry, we started a bit late, but I do have to go off to another call. I'm sorry.
Okay.
So cool. I shall abandon thee. Okay. Thanks for joining. See you next week.
See ya.
Oh no, we're not going to see you next week. It's Golden Week next week.
Golden Week next week. Yeah. Well, I'll be around, but
2 weeks.
Yeah. We'll maybe see you in a couple of weeks. Thanks.
See ya. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
All right. Trust you've enjoyed the conversation. It was definitely fascinating for me. I always learn something new when chatting with these experts. Hope you did as well. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com, and he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks, and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes Store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again.